All right, we are live on a Monday morning. Leanne Moll's in studio with me, and dun da da dun da da dun da da dun da da da. Look who's here! It's George Meany. How's it, George?
Hello. Fine, and you, Gareth and Leanne. I haven't seen Leanne in like a decade.
I know. It's ridiculous, and I look exactly the same, even better.
You're looking better, Leanne.
Yeah, of course. Nice to see you, George. So the last time we saw you was, I think, end of last year.
Yeah.
And you've been so busy. George is like flying around the world talking about sustainability and electric cars and the market and auto traders just doing 100,000 things. So you've been busy.
I've been very busy.
It's not like you've been avoiding us, because people were worried, oh, George has decided he doesn't want anything to do with us. We're bad for his reputation. That's not it.
That's not it.
Promise?
I promise. That's definitely not it. It's a case of there's a lot to do. The economy. The economy.
You almost said the word that we were all thinking. Yeah.
Is a tough place at the moment.
It is. Yeah. So just quickly, because I don't want you to talk work too much while you're with us this morning, but often the barometer for the economy is car sales.
Yeah.
And you guys are like the biggest place on the internet in South Africa to buy and sell cars.
Yeah.
What are you picking up?
So one of the KPIs I can share with you is we track a metric in the business called market day supply, which is how long does it take to turn a car through the Auto Trader platform.
Yes.
And at the moment, that's at 73 days for the average dealer.
73 days. So that means people are taking longer to make the decisions as well.
So dealers are taking longer to sell cars. Mm. Consumers are taking longer to buy cars. Now,
what does that tell you? Is there a capital problem?
The problem is the interest rate. The bottom line is the interest rate. It affects affordability. So before I get to the interest rate, so you've got to compare 73 days to what? Because the context is important. Mm. Normal is 45 to maybe 60 days at a push if you're not such a great dealer or you don't have the right stock that turns quickly. Maybe 30 days if you're a kick-ass dealer. So 73 is long. 73 is really long to sell a car.
So we can't blame supply and demand like we usually would, because there are lots of cars and there are lots of people who need cars.
There's a bit of supply and demand going on, but not as much as the interest rate.
But the interest rate is so important. Yeah.
It affects affordability. I mean, you imagine interest rates going up 1%. And you buy, let's call it for ease of numbers, a R1 million car. 1% on R1 million means that you might not be able to afford that car on your current salary that you could have afforded last year.
Right.
Because the repayment would have gone up. And that's one of the biggest problems.
Vyasin says, I'm loving the Auto Trader ads.
Very cool. Nice. I'm liking them too.
Great ads. And KB says, welcome back, Borge. Carl says, maybe Borge can fix the app this morning. No, he can't.
Everyone's so desperate to have this bloody app fixed.
No, we're going to figure it out. I don't know what's going on. Something's happened. All right. So we got a lot to talk about this morning that has nothing to do with Borge's job. I've got to tell you this horrible story. In fact, Leanne is the professional, so she can. Woman dies after being chased by a bear in Slovakia. I'm going to make her read the story because she's a pro at this stuff.
I haven't done this in a while.
What a horrible story.
So a 31-year-old woman from Belarus. What did George W. call it? Belarus.
Yeah.
Isn't it Belarus? No.
This woman
is Baton Rouge in Florida. That's where it's from.
This woman has died. She was chased by a bear in the north of Slovakia.
Jesus. It chased her all the way into Belarus?
Oh, shame. Anyway, she was walking with a male companion that was set upon by a bear.
The language is funny. Just hang on. No one says things like that anymore.
It's like proper English.
We were walking through the forest and suddenly we were set upon by a bear.
So according to the man, he and the woman fled in different directions.
Yeah, well, nice guy he is.
I reckon he actually threw her in front of him and ran backwards. Yeah,
what a gentleman.
Mm. Yeah. The area has thick forest and steep ravines. Now, this is the thing, though. They don't actually know how she died. The woman's body was discovered by a search dog shortly after her companion went for help. The bear was still nearby. Was it licking its chops? It doesn't say. It was frightened off by mountain rescue service with warning shots from a gun. It remains unclear how the woman died, whether she fell to her death.
Oh my God.
Or she was killed by the bear. I mean, there's a party story.
So what's worse? What do you think is worse?
I think I'd want to get it over and done with and just fall.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Instead of being, because you might be half mauled.
George, I've always said being eaten, much more humiliating in the long run.
Yeah.
Your family go, remember Catherine? She's eaten.
Yeah. And what if it starts from the feet up? And,
yeah. Would you rather be eaten or fall to your death?
I'd rather fall because it's sudden.
Yeah.
That's Leanne's position.
It's like, why do divers wear diving knives?
So they can kill themselves if the shark comes.
Oh, so you can stab your buddy if you see a shark.
Oh, clever. See, you've got a real survival brain.
Tells us diving a lot about, with George.
Don't go diving with George. Yeah, okay.
So there have been a number of bear attacks in recent years, including one fatal attack in 2021. And reported to be the first in Slovakia for a century. So Slovakian bears aren't that
They're not that
bearish.
Good at killing. Yeah, no. They're not that good at killing. Listen, we are very lucky in Africa that we don't have bears because they are quite dangerous things. I saw a picture, and I have no reason to believe that this is untrue, of Cyril Ramaphosa's son, Tumelo. Mm. Who was in, I think that's his name. He was in Russia visiting. He's got business there or whatever. He's got like a company that supplies meat. And he was in Russia and there are pictures of him riding a bear.
I didn't even know that was the thing.
Yeah, the thing. So I don't know what to make of that. But the president's son, our president's son, was in Russia riding a bear.
Well, when you're from Africa and you have lions and elephants, and we can ride elephants, you've got to prove yourself when you go to Russia.
So you reckon it's like a manly me ride bear?
This is nothing. I've got the Listen, big five.
Does anyone else in the world ride ostriches?
That's a scary thing. Have you tried that?
Uh-uh. I've been there for the races. Yeah.
I believe those things are wild.
They are scary. And also they're a bit dinosaurish. Mm. You know, people think an ostrich is a bird, but it's kind of dinosaurish.
Yeah,
if you ask me. It is a bit, right? It's not a very they look ungainly and of course they can't fly, but they can run and they can kick.
Yeah.
They can kick.
They dance nicely though, when they put out their wings and do that mating dance.
You
they
like
go
it?
Around
does
in
it,
circles.
Get you
turns,
excited.
Turns me on, yeah. Ruffles my feathers.
Mapelo says, I think drowning in water or burning to your death are the worst. But burning apparently is pretty awful.
I think burning's worse than drowning.
Yeah.
Because apparently with drowning, you pass out quickly.
Yes, apparently you don't really know you're drowning.
Yes.
But with burning, it's
from the outside.
It might be from the smoke first that kills you.
Rebellious Ruth has a totally different look at this. She goes, shame, poor bear, how humiliating.
Yeah, I imagine it couldn't catch her and she just jumped off.
Like if there's a bear newspaper.
Yeah.
Like there's a human newspaper reporting the terrible death of this poor woman and she could have been eaten by a bear or she could have been killed by falling into the ravine. And then the bear newspaper, if there is such a thing, all the bears are reading it going,
Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
calling
weak,
him in the village. Hey, Winnie.
What a weak ass bear this is. Like, you kids mustn't grow up to be like that bear.
Oi, Paddington.
What are you, some kind of loser? What's up with you? Bears always go for the face, says Janine. Is that true?
No.
Ooh.
I remember that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm sure
yes.
You guys saw it.
Wasn't it called The Bear?
The Revenant or something.
I never saw that.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, you're missing out.
The Revenant.
What's
I'm going to go and look for it now.
It was, I think that's what it's called.
Yes, something like that. Yeah.
It was the most apparently based on a real story of like some guy in the late 1800s who this bear found him and like almost killed him and he managed somehow to survive. But you see how this thing keeps attacking. Ooh. And they've got like a mean streak.
And it wasn't over one day. It was
it really drew the attack out over a period. And maybe if there's someone who's seen it more recently, because this is about 8 years ago that I saw this movie, but it suddenly occurred to me that we don't have, a lion is going to, it wants to eat you.
Yeah.
With a bear, it's almost like a malicious, malevolent thing. You know, it's like an axe to grind. It was... horrible story. And I watched this movie, and afterwards I was just very grateful that we don't have bears living here.
Yeah, I would.
There was something called an Atlas bear that, you know, back in the days when there were really big mammals on Earth.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, mammoths. There was an Atlas bear.
And saber-toothed tigers and all that sort of thing. There was an Atlas bear. I want to look this thing up and just find you a picture in the meantime, because this is a scary looking thing. And apparently they used to roam North Africa. And apparently these things were 9 feet tall. Okay. The muzzle and claws shorter than those of the American black bear, but it was stouter and thicker in body. It weighed up to 1,000 pounds, which is 450 kilograms. What's wrong with your headphones? Is there a problem?
Repeat of your voice.
We're getting a repeat of your voice for some reason. God,
I don't know what's going
all
on.
All of a sardine.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, try and figure that out, James. James has got so many. He says the app is back up. He fixed it.
So that's what we're hearing is the app.
Try now. See if you can get it now.
Yes.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, sure.
We were hearing you twice.
You were hearing you like
too much.
All right, let me find you a picture of this thing. This is a scary looking thing. The Atlas bear. And apparently it had 1,000 pounds of weight, which is about 450 kilograms. They died out.
There's some people that weigh that, don't they? Aren't they?
400 kilo person.
I'd rather be attacked by a 400 kilo person. They are probably, but it's the only native bear subspecies that survived into modern times. And this thing was brownish black in color. And apparently it was presumed to be similar to other brown bears, but was carnivorous.
So it ate meat.
It was not a nice looking thing. I'm going to try and find you a picture of it quickly.
Are all bears not carnivorous?
They're omnivorous.
Omnivore.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some like mosaics in Roman temples and things of what these Atlas bears look like.
I'm still stuck on the way the bear extends its attack.
Yeah, yeah. This Revenant movie really screwed it up for me. I was having a very happy time until I saw that movie. I was like, oh, cute, cuddly, cute little bears. You know, who doesn't have a teddy bear when they're a kid? Here's what they looked like. Take a look at that. Oh, unbelievable.
Wow. You know what? That tail and the the back legs always look cute no matter what.
You think that's cute?
Yeah, it's kind of like the back of a Rottweiler.
I don't like
it. But when you get to the front, it's a Rottweiler.
No. The app is fixed. Yeah, baby. Okay, good. Good, good, good. So Azalea brings up the obvious next level of this, which is Cocaine Bear. Did you ever watch that movie?
It's still on my list to watch on, I think, Netflix.
Love that movie.
I feel like I've been living in the dark ages.
You haven't seen Cocaine Bear either. George, your life is about to get a whole lot more interesting.
Oh, this is a 2023 movie.
Yes.
No, it's a horror. That's why.
Well, you don't watch horror movies. Ah. But it's not really a horror movie because Cocaine Bear is almost like a comedy.
It says horror/comedy.
I know, so. But of course.
It was based on a true story as well.
Yes. These guys were trying to get rid of cocaine. They were flying in a small plane, and they had to dump the cocaine that was because they knew they were going to land and the guys were coming to search the plane. Mm. They'd been tipped off. So they dumped it
over like a forest,
like a reserve, a nature reserve. And I think it was a black bear found this thing, scratched it open,
and got
totally high. And for, I don't know, 90 minutes was the apex predator on planet Earth. With all the hype and the energy and the mental acuity that, you know, like 17 stockbrokers in Wall Street have given day.
Yeah, because, I mean, cocaine gives you this false sense of confidence.
Oh, yeah, this bear
How do you be more confident than a bear?
This thing was, and it just went to town. It's like scary as hell. Jeez. And then eventually its heart just gave in or something. You know, like most drug addicts, it OD'd.
I watched this YouTube channel called The Institute of Anatomy. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
It's these two guys. They're doctors.
Yeah.
And they they dissect cadavers. Mm. They don't do it on screen, but they've got cadavers wrapped in plastic in their laboratory. And you can see the cadavers in the background wrapped in plastic, and then they dissect these things. And they do show you the actual dissections.
Oh, yes, I have seen this.
Institute of Human Anatomy, I think it's called.
Everything looks like chicken.
Looks like chicken, yeah. It's like a yellowy color.
Well, it's because of the formaldehyde. Mm. You it would be more like reddish if
but
the
they lift
was
the
fresh.
Flaps and they show you how everything works.
The flaps, hey, they go straight for the flaps.
But my link to cocaine was I watched a video of theirs where they dissected a cadaver and showed you the effect on your nasal passages of cocaine.
Mm. Oh, really?
And apparently it never heals.
No, it doesn't. No, it eats away at your.
There's a lining in your passages here.
It's the middle
away.
Tendon called.
Yes. The septum.
The septum, thank you. Tendon. No, it just creates a hole all the way through. Oh. Sorry, a cartilage.
Oh. I didn't realize it never heals.
That's why people eventually resort to using cocaine through another orifice.
Really? Mm. Which one's preferred after the nose runs?
The bum one.
Really? They use the bum hole.
Yeah, they do.
Would they put a spoonful of sugar up there and help the medicine go down? How does it work?
I wouldn't want a spoonful of sugar up there.
How does it work?
Yeah, you literally just
what do you do?
Stuff it up, apparently.
Really?
Like a suppository.
Jesus, yeah. That must be. And then you obviously get like an instant.
Yeah, it also gets absorbed into your blood vessels immediately. Wow. Like a suppository would, yeah.
What? This is amazing. Institute of Anatomy is great, says Bailey. Also, big fan of that channel. I've attended an autopsy. As just a you know, you can go as a bystander. And I was thinking of studying medicine at the time, but I also went to the Anatomy Museum in Pretoria. I've spoken about this before.
Oh,
you
yes.
remember I told you. And before you go there, they have to check that none of your relatives are displaced.
Oh yes.
So they actually do a little search on, you know, checking to match surnames or whatever.
Oh, wow. You don't want to see Anthora.
You don't have Anthora in a jar kind of looking out at you with half her face missing.
Oh,
so they have to check that out. And then, you know, they also check if you have any really serious psychological problems. So luckily, I got through that examination.
Jeez, I'm surprised.
I made it through, right? And
it must be quite something to see a dead corpse.
You know, there's that famous, I think it's Damien Hirst. Or no, it's not him. It's the body work.
Hamian Durst.
That's it. And they did that display of where they've actually managed to
splice.
No. There's one particular exhibit where they've got just the brain and the spinal cord and as many of the nerves as they could individually cut out of the system.
Oh, wow.
And it shows you like what you really are. Because when you take away the meat and the bones,
that's what you are.
That's what you are. This brain with this like root, with these other roots coming off of it.
You're a plant.
Yeah, it's a very
deciduous root and adventitious root.
When you look at it, and it's just the eyes and all of these nerves, and the brain and the spinal cord, obviously, which is the gray matter. And you look at this, and you go, "It's actually what you look like when they take away all the." Other stuff that's there to make you move.
Because everything's there just to protect that, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite something to see.
Were the organs in it?
No. They'd taken away all the organs, but they'd shown where the...
I suppose if you could replace everything in your body, that's the part you couldn't replace.
Yeah, correct. And they're trying to, you know, with Neuralink and all the rest, they're trying to find a way to either preserve the... nervous system after a body death, or to be able to create some sort of link between the technological and the neurological, which is essentially what this Neuralink will do. And if it works, let's say it can get people who've been paralyzed to use their limbs again.
Isn't that called the singularity?
No, singularity is where we will perform at the same rate.
Yeah,
you know, the ability to make a decision or. Process information or store information, or when we reach the same capacity with a computer. And I think someone said that we're already there. I'm not entirely sure. Ray Kurzweil very famously predicted 2024 as being the year. So this is it, everybody. This is the last year humans will be the apex predators of Earth. After this, our own creations, which means the machines.
We've created the machine that's equal to us.
Correct. So that's going to happen at some point. But at this anatomy museum, it's quite fascinating. You go in and they've got also a bunch of deformed humans and creatures and things that were born.
Mishappens.
I say things. It's very disrespectful. I suppose you got to call them people. That were born but didn't survive because they had like an extra head or whatever else. Mm. So you've got the freak show in there as well, which is fascinating.
Oh, I mean, you would have loved that.
This is the point. Like, I literally walked into this place and they've got, I mean, it's obviously distressing to some people. Yeah. To me, I just heard anyway, it was lots of fun to watch because they've got all these obviously the mothers with they drank the whole way through pregnancy or they took serious drugs or the child was just some kind of freak of nature that was deformed in some way.
Yeah.
And they're all in jars and in displays and you can actually see what's going on there. It's pretty listen. The fact that you're alive, I keep saying this.
It's a freaking phenomenon.
Yeah.
The fact that you're alive and you can think and you can move and make sense of the world around you and
you can abuse your body and you'll still be okay.
That's it. So you see some of these things and you think, man, I'm okay, actually. Mm. You know, if you're ever thinking you feel sorry for yourself, just get yourself a little tour of that. There's a similar one at the EFF Museum where the eyes attach directly to the skull because there is no brain, says Carl. Leanne, some men are so experienced it becomes cockcane, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh.
He means the cocaine. Mm.
Maybe.
They front load it?
Thank you for saying that. Perhaps it's a front loader.
Sure, okay. The best bear movie is Piglet and Pooh for Blood and Honey. Terrible movie, by the way. That sounds horrific.
Piglet and Pooh.
Yeah, they're from famous A.A. Milne, Winnie the Pooh story. I can't imagine anyone twisting that.
Oh, please. I'm sure they have. There must be some kind of weird porn as well.
Oh, my God. My favorite series for 2024 so far is Masters of the Air. It tickles me in all the right spots, says Joking Atheist.
Apparently it's from the World War.
So yeah.
Pilots.
Yes. Battle of Britain and all the rest of it. Yeah, that's what I've heard. I heard it's very good, though. I think there's a sequel being made.
You would love that, George.
What's it called? Masters of the Air?
Well, I probably would.
George is taking notes here. It's like he's basically got homework after this. You come on the show after an absence of 2 months, and look what happens, George.
Masters of the Air. I mean, look at this.
He's going to love this.
He's going to love this.
Freaking hell, I've been under a rock.
Yeah. I don't know which channel it's on, but you'll be able to find it.
I think it's Netflix.
Netflix or Amazon, one of them. All this talk about the nervous system, what about the confidence system, says V-Riz. They had one of a pregnant woman with a child as well who can forget the horse. They're talking about like these anatomy exhibitions. So if you like that channel, you'll find this stuff fascinating. I always was really into anatomy, but not so much into
sicknesses.
Yes, and diseases and people with problems.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm more into how the body works, why it does what it does.
Yeah, me too. So I want to know the physiology and all of that, but I don't actually want to deal with a person.
Mm. Mm.
That's why I would have made, I mean, I'm not clever enough, but if I had become a doctor, I'd have been a terrible person.
You would have been, your bedside manner would have been despicable.
Oh, you've got a smelly, get out of here.
There was a, he still runs it and his son runs it, I think.
Doctor and son practice?
Yeah, I'm not saying the names. The head of the emergency department at a big hospital. Head of the emergency department. Mm. My aunt went in there after having almost every organ removed due to cancer.
Jesus.
And she had like this wire mesh put in her stomach to hold everything together because everything had become displaced.
Now, this is, by the way, perfect stuff for you if you're having your breakfast on a Monday morning.
While we're talking about
George and Leanne and I talking about cutting people open.
That's one thing I don't do is get queasy when I eat. Like,
don't you? Doesn't affect you at all.
No.
And he poked at her stomach and said, "You know that you could walk a bit more. You're a bit overweight." This is what this emergency medicine doctor said.
Sounds like
her.
Me. That's how
you would have said. Yeah. Someone comes in there with like, has been through the wars, you would say you need to lose weight.
Bodyworks, apparently, that's what it was called. That's the show. Bodyworks, you bought illegal cadavers from an undertaker who was supposed to cremate and give the ashes back to the family. I saw the exhibition in Amsterdam. I think they came here with that in South Africa a couple of years ago.
Hmm.
That was where they took a body and they spliced it into a bajillion pieces and put them each on slides. And then they moved the slides. You could see the body as a whole. Or you could separate them.
That was part of the exit. You would have loved that. I think George's would have been right up your street because it is fascinating to know what's going on inside the body and which organs do what and all of that stuff. But to actually be a doctor is a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more being a scientist of human anatomy that fascinates me rather than dealing with the live squishy human.
Yeah, exactly. Vera says, George watches dissections while eating fava beans and a fine Chianti. No, don't mischaracterize George. He's just interested in physiology, so same as me. All right, Leanne's got some stories for us about an AI massager. I don't know if I like this. I'm already queasy.
AI is in a robot?
Yeah. Yes. No, it's not queasy-inducing at all.
I want some machine poking and prodding. You can't say, hey.
It just massages. You can.
You can say, hey.
You can, basically.
That's sore.
So it was actually, it comes from a really good source, which is why I like this. She's the editor of technology at Mashable. So she actually put
really
herself.
Good source, huh?
Yes, okay. I think so. She put herself in the hot seat, and I've sent you some pictures, I think.
Right, we'll put them on the screen.
Where you actually lie in this chair and an AI machine massages your back. The best thing about this is that, number one, you don't have to be naked. So, you know, that's always the difficult part for me is like getting naked in front of someone in a salon. You've got to actually wear the suit because that's how the arms glide over you.
Okay, that's clever.
Number two, you decide the pressure.
Well, the one thing I dislike about massages is all the oil.
Yes, you don't like that. There's no oil.
Afterwards, you get up and you get into your car and then suddenly you're like, your whole car is full of like,
you can't go back to work because your hair's all oily. And then, you choose your own pressures.
Okay.
You can say like whether it's in a good spot or not and it'll move for you. Because how many times do you, when she says to you, is that a good pressure? You go, no, it's okay. But it's not really. You wanted it a bit harder, a bit softer.
I've had massages where she asks, how do you want the pressure? And I say, well, medium to hard. I don't want it too hard.
Don't
tickle me either.
Yeah.
And she's just not strong enough.
Yes.
You can go like full on hard for her is not even.
This is a robot. I'm just worried that if you go, you can go a bit harder and the thing like pushes right through your ribs.
I was imagining when Leanne started talking that this was an actual like
a human
form robot.
Well, it's those robot arms. Yeah, if you aren't watching on YouTube, and you should be, then you can like and subscribe while you're doing it. But it's those robot arms that they would use for surgery and all kinds of other things. Mm.
So you lie on a normal looking massage bed with a hole for your face and face down. Mm-hmm. But it actually looks really comfortable. And in front of you is a tablet and you can then adjust certain things, which is amazing.
How much better is this than the massage chair? Because those massage chairs are, have you ever been in one?
I feel like you have to move around a bit to get it into the right spots. But this woman who goes for regular massages says that she's actually convinced that this could replace misuses. She's saying, misuses, look out, because this was, you can speed up to the good part if you want. If it's like, I'm tired of the warm up, let's just get to the good stuff.
Right.
Lots of things. She says, so as it stands now, a massage at Acescape's Robo Massage Table costs $60 for a 30-minute session, $120 for an hour. Not bad, and in my opinion, totally worth it. I'd 100% do it again.
George, you will have, because you're a smart numbers guy, you would have also seen this immediately. What's the difference for the robot between 30 minutes and 120 minutes? It's the same amount of energy. It's just using a bit more electricity, but it's not going to get tired. Mm-hmm. The reason you pay extra for the 120-minute massage is because you feel sorry for the masseur, because they're going to get tired.
And you don't have to tip them.
Right, exactly. You don't have to tip the machine. Machine must get on with it.
You see, there are lots of positives.
Shouldn't cost that much more. You don't double the fee. The machine is not getting there.
They did double it.
They doubled it. Not good. Bad economics.
Well, I suppose until it gets to scale, it's going to be more expensive. Well, because they have to invest in the machine initially.
Let's also
but
be.
But also, it's taking up the time that it could have been using on a new person.
Well, you could build 10 of these things and have them going 24/7.
Well, you don't have the salary, I suppose. So
don't have a salary.
The cost comes down.
And let's be fair, the only reason that this could have massive application besides these economic factors is because a lot of people don't like other people touching them.
Mm. Mm.
That's the other thing. So there are some people, I know people who will not go for a massage because they don't like other people touching them.
Mm.
They don't want to actually be having a conversation with somebody about how much pressure they need.
Mm.
They would prefer to just tap something on a screen.
I'm like that. I get into an Uber, get onto a massage table. I don't want to talk.
Yeah. You're actually like, there.
I spend my life talking.
But there is so much about a massage for some people that's where the human to human touch is, the tactile thing is so important.
Which apparently and that's gets part of hormones the therapy. Going as well. I wonder if the machine gets the hormones going. Because human touch generates.
Oh, no, it's very important to have human touch. In fact, they say that some of the reasons that, for example, single people in big cities should go for massages is because otherwise they won't get that touch if they don't have anyone in their lives. And it's important.
Yeah. So
and
when you leave the machine, just get a hugger on the outside.
Yeah. Well like in Japan, you can hire professional cuddlers.
That is so creepy.
Apparently it's a thing.
Yeah, come on. I mean, how bad would
I don't know. I've thought about I've even thought about because I try and often think about men and prostitutes and how it works. And so obviously think about what about women and male prostitutes. And there was that woman that movie recently as well with Dame.
Who?
English actress. Emma.
Thompson.
Thompson, where she, as an older woman, hired a young male prostitute.
Mm.
And it often makes me think, what are the differences that you would want? And she ended up needing to learn about him and know him and go on a few sessions with him before actually doing the deed. But also just that feeling of being touched, how important that is.
Yeah.
And I've often thought about it.
Isn't there some studies that show that single people don't live as long as people in relationships?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes,
true. And generally, the more connections, the more important meaningful connections you have in your life, the longer you will live.
Yeah.
That's been overriding all the other factors. So you could be healthy, you can eat right, you can gym, you can make sure that you are in good physical condition. But if you don't have meaningful interactions with other people in your life, you'll probably live a shorter life.
Mm.
It's that simple. It's quite a scary thought, actually, for so many people, because we do know that it's become much more difficult now than it's probably ever been, especially for young people who are looking for relationships to find that person. So now we're adding an extra layer of complexity. You go for a machine massage. Mm, it's just one less person you actually deal with. Mm. I mean, how often do you think, rather than make supper tonight, I'll just order on this app? And then you don't have to have any interaction. You go to a restaurant, you still have to talk to a waitress or a waiter.
Mm.
You still have to, how do you want your steak or what? Yeah. There's some conversation.
You hear other people around you.
You
see other people. Dodge someone on the pavement. Sorry, excuse
me. Sure. You have to do things.
It's like doing this show. I hate doing it online.
Yeah, it's got to be in person.
It's in person is so much better. It's
absolutely. Mm. I was going to do the show from home this morning, and I thought, no, George and Leanne will hate me if I'm
ready. Yeah, we would have hated you.
My board cut out.
That's true. All right. So here's Rebellious Ruth says, as a trained somatologist, you shouldn't be chatty. Chatting is not a hair salon. It's not a hair salon.
Yeah, I don't want to chat. I want to keep quiet during those things.
I just, as a general rule, I mean, Larry David, who, Curb Your Enthusiasm, one of my favorite shows in the whole world, he doesn't like the stop and chat. You know, where you're walking down the street and you see someone you know, you have to have the stop and chat.
I don't like that.
No. And the same goes, sometimes you go for a haircut and, you're in a good mood, you could talk a little bit, but sometimes you just do it.
You know what happened to me over the weekend?
What happened?
So I was in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And visiting my sister. And I was there for work at the end of last week, and then I just stayed on Saturday.
Right.
And we went to a hockey match of one of her kids.
Yeah.
And I was tapped on the shoulder and turned around. This guy said to me, "Oh, George." I didn't know he was.
Oh, no.
Someone from listens to the show?
No, no. Someone in the industry.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know who he was.
And you couldn't remember who he was? And
no, I mean, apparently I had interacted with him once or twice. Started chatting to him. But my point is really where, you know, you're in a particular industry and I'm not really there to talk about work. I was there to watch my nephew play hockey.
Right.
And I stood there and to talk about work for 30 minutes.
And you just want to get out of it, but you also don't want to be rude because this could be someone you have to do work with at some point in the future.
So I was polite.
Oh, it's the worst.
Know, but that stop and chat situation.
It's bad.
You know, I was like, my sister, save me.
I usually, I just go straight for, I'm about to throw up. Can I quickly go? I need to go to the bathroom.
Huge fart on board. Excuse me.
Just have Leanne there. She'll be able to deal with any of that. What's your standard get out of the stop and chat situation?
I say my dog's in the car or something.
My dog's in the car.
Yeah, I've got to go. My mom's had another stroke. I don't know.
It's terrible. The film The Surrogates shows the logical endpoint of all of this. Everyone interacts with the world through remote controlled humanoid robots without ever leaving their homes. I'm worried about that.
Yeah, very much so.
And I know, George, you're big on technology and you and I are both, you know, optimists in that respect. We both believe that this will make the world better, more efficient, all of that. But it is scary to think that somewhere along the way, there could be this situation where some people, not all of us, but some people spend their entire lives behind a screen.
Mm. It's probably already happening to a certain degree. It's scary to think. I'm all for the computer human interface. Mm. So, you know, where you are part of the digital environment, Neuralink type thing.
Yeah.
But not taking yourself out of society.
I just don't know how our brains, which have evolved over millions of years, our brains are just not capable of processing things the way that a computer would. And if the computer actually moves faster than we do beyond the point of the singularity, how are our brains going to cope with all of that? There's going to be a
bandwidth issue.
A bandwidth issue, but some kind of breakdown in the system when it overloads and it needs to be rebooted. And I don't know how that works with a brain. You can see it with a computer. The computer, the screen just freezes, and that's our interaction with it. But inside the machine, it's overheating. It's the processing unit's just been overloaded. There's some kind of physical breakdown at an atomic level. I don't know what happens with the brain. You can't just reboot the brain. You know, press and hold that button until it all.
You know, I'm just imagining walking through Sandton City, and you get people that
just freeze. They stop moving.
Yeah. And then you get uploaded with new software and you're good to go for 480 rand.
But then there's a glitch and you suddenly start speaking Arabic and then you get like back out of it. That was Arabic, by the way.
Spoke.
Oh, man. This is why I do various jobs, says Helen. I don't know what those jobs are, Helen, but I'm going to leave it to everybody else. Helen being very cryptic with her various jobs. It is like going to a dinner party and you find that someone finds out you're in an industry and they can't stop talking about their problems. Awful. No dinner etiquette.
And you don't get to have fun and speak to other people.
Yeah, I had the most awesome experience last week. Someone who lives in this country, but he's only been here for a short while. And he had no idea who I was and what I'd done. And it was cool because there's no backstory. So you're actually like interacting with someone for the first time and they're like, "Oh, what do you do?"
Fresh start.
And I could tell he wasn't being a dick about it. He just didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, it was actually quite a cool conversation. It's fantastic.
I was thinking earlier, have you met people lately who are visiting South Africa and they've never visited South Africa before? It's their first time. For me, that I'm finding it less and less. Most people have been here before.
You get those first-time tourists. I think a lot of people have discovered South Africa in the last while because it's cheap. You talk about interest rates in cars, but one of the big things, the currency exchange,
20 times.
It's great value to come to South Africa if you're from Europe or the States.
I was in Portugal a month and a half ago.
Oh, yeah, love it.
Love that country. I was in Portugal and. And I don't generally eat burgers,
right?
Because of the bun. I don't eat the bun. But everything on the hotel menus were at least 300 rand, 400 rand for a meal if you converted it. Right,
it's a lot of money.
So I thought, let me go down to like Burger King or something.
Bad.
$18 for a burger.
That's hectic. It's expensive. You see, our rand is really not great at the moment. And I don't know. You have to have serious money to be able to travel and just live the same way as you would in this country, not more extravagantly. And that's the key. People always used to say to me, when you travel, the best thing you can do to manage your expenses is to just live the same way that you would in your own country.
Mm.
In other words, don't go and you don't go out for a steak every night.
Yeah.
And you don't spend huge amounts of money on luxuries.
Well, that's a nice thing. When you go to like places in Europe, you'll visit the markets, the local markets, and buy like the locals do. It's still going to be amazing if you cook it yourself. It's the freshest produce.
I suppose, to be fair, I was in Lisbon, which is...
Lisboa, a lovely place.
Which is probably more metropolitan and more expensive.
100%.
Leanne usually just finds some Portuguese man and then shacks up with him. He pays for all of her meals and things, so she doesn't actually know the cost of anything.
I don't know.
Leanne, how much was it?
I've traveled the whole of Europe like that.
Someone else paid. It's fine. James, the producer, says, when I was in Turkey in December, a normal Big Mac from McDonald's was over 200 Rand. Again, that's hectic, right? And that's just pure exchange rates. That's what that is. All right. Well, we've got a couple other stories in the news that are worth talking about. Leanna's got a mass extermination plan for Marion Island. Now, it's not of humans, thank goodness.
Well, there are hardly any there.
There are no humans on Marion Island. It's basically an abandoned island in the South Atlantic. South Africa owns it.
Yes, belongs
to us. You didn't know that we had another.
Near Antarctica.
But it's not a tropical island at all.
Why
it's cold.
Exterminated?
Okay, so on the island, they basically use it as like for preservation of animal and plant species.
It's uninhabited by humans. It's too cold. It's too arid. There is nothing that will grow there. You can't grow crops. I don't know if there's even fresh water on the island.
There's quite a bit that grows. I mean, but not sort of edible crops.
Okay.
But there's an amazing bird population. You've got wandering albatrosses there. There are a number of birds which are protected there. And basically what's happened is the mice that were introduced by mistake in the 1800s,
mm-hmm.
So 200 years ago, someone got there and introduced mice to the island. That population has become so large that these mice are now eating big birds alive.
Jeez.
How big are these mice?
A mouse or a rat?
Mice.
Mice.
They are little mousesses.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're as cute as anything. They're just normal-looking mice.
No, like a little dormouse.
Probably like attack them like a bunch of ants.
But there's so many that they're actually, like, firstly getting into the nests and secondly climbing up on top of smaller albatrosses and starting to, like, eat them alive.
That's horrific. So they must exterminate.
They have
them.
I'm in favor.
So it's not a doing away of the island.
No. But they're going to exterminate the mice. So what are they poisoning them?
It's the Mouse Free Marion Project, pest control on a grand scale.
Lucky those buggers can't swim.
Oh, well, they're about to have to learn. Talk about evolution in real time.
Come a bit north and you hit Cape Town.
We're worried about our brains not keeping up with the fast computers, but these mice better evolve very quickly to swim. They better grow gills.
Freaking hell.
Yeah.
So they'll do 4 to 6 helicopters filled with poison, rodenticide. 550 tons of this stuff is going to be dropped across the island. So the pilots will be given the exact flight lines and they'll be able to track the drop using GPS mapping. The bait has been designed not to affect the soil or the island's water sources. It shouldn't harm the seabirds who feed out at sea, won't have negative impacts on the environment. Some animals will be affected at an individual level, but those species will recover. So there's no perfect solution to this.
Wow.
It says that Marion Island is part of the Western Cape.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a tiny little island indeed. In the middle of the South Atlantic.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they do expeditions out to there on ship, but there's no airport or anything. So the only way to get there is on the ship that will go there once every 2 months.
Or on the back of a mouse.
On the back
through
of
the water.
A new swimming mouse.
Yeah. Don't land on that
the island. New evolved swimming mice.
Mice are going to see a human. Ooh.
Yeah. This is good.
Lunch.
Next thing you know, you'll be climbing into our eyeballs and eating them out from the inside.
While
not
you're
good.
Sleeping.
Yeah.
So there are about 30 bird species and it's a rare undisturbed habitat for wandering albatrosses, which have a 10-foot wingspan. And those mice are getting under that wingspan and going in there.
But and this poison not going to kill the birds?
They say they shouldn't. But I mean, this is again, humans in, you know, getting in the way of things. So already in the 1940s, when the mouse problem had started becoming a thing, they took 5 domestic cats and put them onto the island and left them there. By the 1970s, so 30 years later, there were 2,000 feral cats on the island, killing 500,000 seabirds per year.
Yeah, so these poor seabirds.
So then the cats were eliminated by introducing a feline flu virus. And the rest were hunted down.
With guns?
Yes.
Wow. Imagine a cat shoot. Does that depress you, Leanne?
This is literally like the woman who ate a fly and then had to eat the spider to eat the fly. And
there was an old woman who swallowed a fly. I don't know why she swallowed a fly.
I guess she'll die. And then there was
you know this
woman
one,
who swallowed
George.
A spider.
I've heard it, but I don't know.
Wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. Then she swallowed a bird to eat the spider. She swallowed a cat to eat the bird. She swallowed a dog to eat the cat. She swallowed a horse
to eat the dog. Which makes no sense at all.
And then it said she's dead, of course.
Yeah.
But this is, again, humans just getting involved and trying.
I thought the moral of the story of that particular song was don't be greedy. No?
I just thought it was just to get the fly.
Okay. I think she'll die.
That's all. Don't do dumb shit.
Yeah. Don't try to eat everything.
Ways to die.
That's exactly right. Okay. So you've learned a lot this morning. But you've got to be careful because these poor birds that live on this island, they weren't expecting mice to become their hunters. 20 years ago, cats. Just keep the animals that aren't in an ecosystem out of that ecosystem.
And bring bears to South Africa.
Oh, please don't. Yeah, to take us all the way back to the top. All right, so Borge, apparently you've got some stuff to tell us here because George actually has something about a KZN accident, some terrible accident.
Yeah, so there's a video. I don't know if you've got the video
I've got
there.
The video. Organized here. We got it, yeah. Let's take a look at this.
At that video.
I actually saw this, George, on my rabbit hole over the weekend. Uh-huh. It's a small rural road.
And this happened on the 11th of March.
A rural road.
And a twuck was on its way down the rural road. And it takes the corner, it kind of swerves outside and then smashes straight into it. It looks like a petrol tanker or something.
Oh, my
gosh. Big explosion. Take a look at this. Ooh. Great picture, this. There's the twuck. Looks like it's carrying coal or something. Goes outside of its lane, boom,
another
into a big, must have been a fuel truck.
Something.
That was so quick.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see that coming.
No.
What if you're traveling behind one of those?
Oh, I mean, imagine that happening in front of you.
Horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible, horrible story.
It's like, it looks like a movie set. Like it's false, you know, it blows up too quickly.
Somebody actually said that in the comments to that video.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that it's... It's like, why is there a camera on a rural road, firstly? And secondly,
yes.
You know, it just looks too movie-like.
But also, there's probably a camera there. It might be a high accident zone because that corner looks particularly
well. Apparently, there are cameras all over the country on random places, in random places.
I'm not surprised. People are, you know, in Britain, for example, you can't walk around in London without cameras picking you up.
Mm.
And in China, they've obviously got facial recognition software too.
Ever read 1984?
Yeah. George Orwell, there we go.
In fact, in China, they've just introduced individual cameras above each student in the classroom to watch what they're doing. And apparently there's some protests.
Anyway, the point, my point really was, it's Easter weekend in a week or two.
Yeah.
And that's always big on death tolls.
Yeah. And the fatalities during December, 1,184 people died. But that's disturbing. the subset of these numbers is what was interesting. Driver mistakes accounted for over 80% of the accidents.
Sure.
Environmental factors 10%, and the car itself just under 9%. But the fatalities and the reasons were driving under the influence,
mm-hmm.
reckless driving,
mm-hmm.
And when they pulled people over, they arrested 7,820 drivers, mostly for driving under the influence of alcohol.
I can't believe people are still, especially if you're a truck driver or a bus driver. I mean, that you're responsible for a whole lot more than just yourself in the car. And exactly. And there's so much more damage you can do.
But it also makes sense as to why sometimes on a Tuesday morning you'll be driving somewhere on a highway and the person in front of you's swaying or swerving.
I always assume they're on their phone.
Yeah, but they're probably actually drunk.
On a Tuesday morning, you should be ashamed of yourself for being drunk on a Tuesday morning. But yeah, that's a scary statistic, George.
Very scary. So, you know, the I suppose the point of that video is you can't always see it coming. It's like you've got to be so awake.
It's why they call it an accident. Yeah. Otherwise, you could have avoided it.
You could have avoided it. You've got to be so awake. Don't follow a truck or another car too closely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, in that scenario, if I'd seen it, you know, if you kind of like your brain's quite fast, I'd rather go in the trees.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that would probably be a human's reaction. Mm. Oy.
I also, because again, you go into these rabbit holes online, and then when you watch one accident, it serves so up all. And I don't really want to see a whole bunch of car accidents. I've been in one or two myself, and it's not, you never really get over it. There's a little bit of PTSD. I'm not going to say I'm someone who's suffering. The fact is that once you've been in an accident, you know how it feels and sounds and smells and all of those things. And then it serves up all these accidents to you, and you don't need to see that many.
No,
you really don't. I mean, this is one particularly bad one, and I'm sure there were loads of there's so much damage, but also you probably ended up with both truck drivers dead, right?
Probably. I mean, you couldn't survive that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't survive the impact,
yeah,
the fireball would have taken you out.
So there's a few other pictures I think you've got there, Gareth. And Turkey has put up billboards of accident damaged cars to deter drivers from doing stupid things,
like using their phones.
Yeah, I mean I suppose the main point here is that human factors contributed 81%, and driving under the influence was a big part of that.
Yeah, these are.
And this is in Turkey.
These are car carcasses, if I
human anatomy. Yeah.
It's a car carcass.
Carcasses.
And they put damaged vehicles on top of billboards as a stark reminder for road safety, employing shock value as a deterrent. Mm. In this one that we've got up on the screen at the moment, there's a sign with alcohol.
Which means that this is a worldwide problem.
Yeah.
Turkey.
Yeah, it's a big problem. And then the cell phone one on the other one, it's frightening. I mean, you've got to be super, super careful.
Mm.
You don't want to take a chance on these things. Not good. All right. Well, those are two horrific things. Thanks, George. We were having a great Monday. I mean, I thought we were doing well just talking about like cadavers and really gross stuff and bear attacks. But now we also have to look at billboards with actual car carcasses on them.
We're just reporting what's going on in the world, eh?
Here's a good story. Well, I think it's a good story. Marriage rates are up and divorce rates are down in the USA. I didn't expect this. Did you? In 2024?
I haven't read the story. I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the US is going in the way it's treating relationships, marriage, religion, bearing of children, telling people what to do with their bodies.
Yeah.
I'm actually not surprised that more people are going more traditional.
That's probably exactly right, because this is what's happening. According to new data, being in lockdown, that was where it all changed, gave many couples a unique hurdle to overcome, one that made them get intentional about how they approached important things like finances, compromise, and autonomy. Many people walked out of that experience with a better sense of what they really need in a life partner. So intentionality may be behind declining divorce rates as well. Being stuck at home together during lockdown forced a lot of couples to face problems that they wouldn't have faced otherwise head on. That may have caused additional strife, or it could have helped them to lay better groundwork for a stable future. So what they're saying is they see a lot of change in couples sticking together and trying to work out their problems and not going straight for divorce.
But so what is the marriage rate doing?
So the marriage rate's gone up, but the divorce rate's also gone down.
So is there a decline in people actually getting married?
No.
No.
Seems that that's going up.
Marriage rates are going up. So the actual rate is going up.
Number of young people who want to get married.
It's not a factor of less marriages.
We always thought, and I think this is why this is perhaps a good news story, we always thought that because marriage was on the decline and especially like, I suppose, millennials and maybe a bit of Gen Z were reluctant to get married. That seems to be changing. Cyclical. You know, you go through different stages in human history where people are in a hurry to get married. And apparently when things are tougher, people get married and have kids. In order to, there's some gene human that thing. Kicks in and we're like, oh, we got to go
keep
into
the population
like,
up.
Keep the population up.
Yeah.
So we get into relationships and we start having kids. When things are too good, population decline.
I was doing an analysis for a presentation for work the other day. And part of it was South African demographics. And South African population is growing by 2% per year.
Okay. Well, that's good. And apparently any population where you have a declining population rate ultimately does not go well for that country.
And when you look at South Africa's demographics in terms of we've got, I think it's 13 million employed people.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 40 million people that could work.
Mm-hmm.
Only 13 million of those are employed. Then you. I always say
the big problem is that the children aren't working.
At least not hard enough.
That's not part of the 40.
The children yearn. The children yearn for the work. Just give them the work.
There's 62 million people, so the children are not even in there.
No, they are. They're included, aren't they?
They're included in the 62, not the 40.
Yes, but they're not working is my point. They are not contributing to because they're sucking the life out of the economy. We often have a problem with unemployed people. We say, well, why are all these unemployed people? Who's paying for them? The fact is you are. But with the children, they could be put to work too. What about those good old Victorian workhouses and factories? Yes. You know, the kids used to climb into the parts of the machines that
they'd go down the chimneys and sweep the rooms.
Yes, they could do things. I'm saying put the children to work. Anyway, your point, George. Sorry.
My point was really that I just want to pull these numbers up here. Unemployed people that mark the census as unemployed is 8 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not economically active is 17 million people. So a lot of people have just given up. They're just,
Yeah.
I'm not unemployed in that category. Sure. I'm just, you know, unemployable according to them.
Mm.
And if you think about if this economy came right, what kind of a workforce we have to produce stuff? The positive side of this is if the economy turns around,
we have ready and willing labor.
We have young, ready and willing.
That's a good
ability.
Point. So that would make us a useful country in the world's economy going forward.
Imagine
And also 2% is a sustainable kind of replacement rate, right? I mean, it means that there are going to be slightly more people tomorrow than there were yesterday. But 2% is manageable.
Yeah.
If it was 18%, it would be.
And if things are on the up, like education and employment, then that 2% is going to be beneficial.
Into the workforce.
Median age is 28 years old in South Africa.
Which is young, by world standards.
We've got a very, very strong workforce that I think could be formidable in the world economy.
Well, there we are. That's a good note to end things on. 8 o'clock.
For sure.
We're going to wrap things up for this morning. Thank you, George. Always nice to see you.
Yes.
Great of you to join us this morning. I think George was coming to spend more time with us like this.
Absolutely.
Had a lot of fun with bear attacks and
carcasses.
You know, carcasses and car cadavers and God knows what else. George, of course, is the CEO of Auto Trader and industry thought leader and electric car expert and owner, because you have both, and a pilot by night. Well, actually during the day. You haven't got your knife license. No. But there we go. George Meany, everybody. And Leanne Moll. Say goodbye, Leanne.
Goodbye.
Wave to the camera.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, there it is. Bye. All right. We will see you tomorrow, 6 o'clock. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.